We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 8th chapter, Prayers by Queen Kunti, text number 21. Krishnaya Vasudevaya,
Krishnaya Vasudevaya,
Devaki Nandanaya cha,
Devaki Nandanaya cha,
Nandakopa Kumaraya,
Nandakopa Kumaraya,
Govindaya Namo Namaha,
Govindaya Namo Namaha,
Krishnaya Vasudevaya,
Krishnaya
Devaki Nandanaya cha,
Devaki Nandanaya cha,
Nandakopa Kumaraya,
Nandakopa Kumaraya,
Govindaya Namo Namaha,
Govindaya Namo Namaha,
Krishnaya Vasudevaya,
Krishnaya Vasudevaya,
Devaki Nandanaya cha, Nandagopa Kumaraya,
Nandagopa Kumaraya,
Govindaya Namo Namaha,
Govindaya Namo Namaha.
Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord who has become the son of Vasudev, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda and the cowherd man of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. Lord Krishna appeared in this world out of his causeless mercy, just as the sun is rising and is setting. And in fact, when the sun is rising and setting, the sun is disappearing from the eyes of those who are on this planet. And to us it looks like the sun is no longer shining. But actually the sun has just moved on and is shining elsewhere. And in this way, Krishna is always performing his pastime somewhere in one universe. If not in this universe, somewhere else. His pastimes are continuously going on. And yet, this is the moment. This is the same astrological constellation when Krishna appeared. Janmashtami. It was the eighth day of the month, and yet, although normally the full moon would appear 1 week later, on the 15th of the month, still, at the time of Krishna's appearance, the moon became full. It just simply became full to glorify Krishna to its full capacity. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared, and everything adjusted. The various stars in the sky adjusted, and only auspicious stars started to appear. The constellation of Rohini came, and somehow or other, everything on earth became peaceful. Although before, there had been a lot of agitation, because so many demoniac kings were on the world and unnecessarily engaging in war and exploiting people, and were also oppressing Brahminical culture. Brahmins were advised to stop their worship. Cows, protection of cows was given up, and thus the world became overburdened by such sinful behavior, just as it's now. The world was agitated, just as it's now, right? But now at this very moment, it is again Krishna Janmashtami. It is the same time when Krishna appeared. And now, the transcendental atmosphere of Krishna's presence is changing everything. And now, who cares? Who cares about unrest in the world? Who cares about extremism? Who cares about anything of this world other than Krishna being in this world? Today is Janmashtami. It is the day where Krishna is in the forefront of our mind, in the forefront of the day. A day where we are remembering Krishna, a day where we are glorifying Krishna, a day where we are worshipping Krishna. Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. Only devotional service and completely absorbed in service to Vasudev. That is now. That is now Janmashtami. That is this titi. That is this moment. This Madhava titi. And from that, our bhakti will grow. It is said that Janmashtami is one of the important factors for cultivating our devotional service. Devotional service is something that must grow. Devotional service is not coming by some decision. From this day on, I will surrender to Krishna. And suddenly, our devotional service is flourishing. No, it's easy to say, I will surrender to Krishna. But surrendering to Krishna is a step-by-step process. A step-by-step process of offering more and more to Krishna. To give up our independence, our resistance. Everyone has resistance to this process. Why I have to do this? Why I have to do that? Why do I have to bow down? And not only physically bowing down. Manmana bhava mat bhakto majaji mam namaskuru. Mameva yezi satyam te bhakti jano priyosi me. We must bow down before Krishna, which means not only the body, but we must bow down our will to Krishna. Give up our independence and just simply become Krishna's instrument. Then, bhayam dvitya binivesitasyat. As soon as one turns away from Krishna, there is fear. So fear is there in our life in so many ways. So many fears may be there. But when we actually are turning to Krishna fully, then all fear immediately disappears. And thus, we must somehow or other, with great enthusiasm, take advantage of this human form of life, which is so rarely attained. It says, Atato Brahma Yigyasa. Now that we have attained this human form of life, now we must inquire. Inquire in the goal of life. And the goal of life is Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Maka, Vasudeva para Kriya, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Dharmo, Vasudeva para Jnanam, Vasudeva. One I'm missing. Param Tapa, Vasudeva para Gati. Vasudev is the end. The end of all austerity. He is the end of all religious principle. He is the end of all sacrifices. He is the end of all knowledge. Ultimately, it is Vasudev who is the goal of life. So, on this day, we can remember that in a more profound way, in a more intense way. And we can just simply dedicate the day to Krishna. This is the day to somehow or other hear more about Krishna, chant more about Krishna, and remember Krishna. Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, especially these three, also to worship Krishna. So like that, we are spending our time. When Krishna is rising early in the morning, Krishna is someone who has difficulty in getting up. He's one of those type of people. He doesn't like to get up in the morning. And Mother Yasoda understands. She says, after all, he is all day with these boys in the forest, you know. And what they make him do, it is really too much. He has to run all over the forest and look for missing calves while they are playing. And then in the game, they are fighting, wrestling, sporting, so many things. No wonder he's exhausted, the poor boy. He's so tired. He just needs his rest. He's still growing, right? I mean, it's important that he actually gets enough rest. But then, you know, The cows are mowing. They're mowing because their udders are full and it is time to be milked. And they cannot wait any longer. Their udders are about to burst and no one can start milking before Krishna has started milking. And therefore the cows now are getting restless and are calling out, "Where is Krishna?" and mowing loud. And the cowherd boys, they are already awake for ages. The cowherd boys in the morning, when they are rising, it is said that the hairs on their body stand on end, thinking that finally the day is about to come. And finally they go to their playgrounds with Krishna. Just the thought of it, they wake up in ecstasy, the hairs of their body stand on end. Krishna is still asleep. So finally, they wake him up. And Maria Soda sees how Krishna is lying in bed and he has all these scratch marks on his body. And she thinks, "These boys are really rough. They even scratch my little Krishna. Poor boy." Anyway, she massages him as he is waking up. She's massaging him with Maha Narayan Tailam. Yes, very nicely. And Krishna wakes up with massage. And then, even before his bath, he quickly goes out to milk the cows. Because they cannot wait any longer. After all, the cows have priority because this is Vrindavan. And the cows are the most important. Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. First the go and then the Brahmana. First the cows and then the Brahmanas. First the protection of the cows. Krishna therefore immediately goes out and is worshipping his cows. Then he returns and enters into the bathing room and there it becomes a whole abhishek, basically, because many devotees are partaking in the bathing of Krishna, and some are putting ornaments on Krishna, ankle bells and like this, and everyone is just dressing Krishna just like dressing the deity, but now it is happening in real life. And thus the day is begun. Rohini already made a fire and is starting to cook. Meanwhile, Yasoda is eagerly waiting for Srimati Radharani to arrive because she has received a benediction of Durvasa Muni. She once really pleased Durvasa Muni so nicely, and subsequently Durvasa Muni gave Srimati Radharani the benediction that whatever she would cook would taste like nectar. And not only that, but that whoever would eat whatever she cooked will gain a long life. Therefore, Yasoda, being the queen of Vrindavan, is demanding that Srimati Radharani must cook. Although her mother-in-law, Jatila, is not very happy about that. Not at all. But then Purnamasi tells Jatila, "You must serve the queen. Because it's Dharma. And if you act according to Dharma, then everything becomes auspicious and your family will become rich." Now that word, Jyotila understands. Rich. I see. All right. What to do? We let her go. And Srimati Radharani is carried in the morning in a palanquin. In that palanquin, she's carried from Yavat to Krishna's residence in Gokul. And there, on the way, she is being fanned by various gopis. And when Srimati Radharani comes, she makes so many amazing preparations. She's just cooking in such an amazing way that everyone is getting like very eager to see what is coming out of the kitchen. And Krishna is cold, by his mother for breakfast. Nanda Maharaj is already waiting. Your father is waiting. Huh? He is waiting for you to come. Then Krishna must come. And so many preparations are served, and that's just breakfast. And they are just piling up the table and the plates with preparations, and Mother Yasoda says, "You're not eating anything." Right? Somehow or other, ladies have this quality, right? That they like to stuff. They like to stuff people and then say, "You're not eating anything." Right? So, this comes originally from Mother Yasoda. So, this will never change. This will go on eternally because it has its roots in the spiritual world. And whatever is happening here in the material world is just a reflection of that spiritual world. In this way, we can see that Krishna is having breakfast, and apparently he's not hungry. He is more distracted by the cook than the preparations, but anyway, somehow or other, he is eating. The residents of Vrindavan are glorifying Krishna. They all say, "Wonderful Krishna." They say, "Krishna is so amazing. Oh, Nanda Maharaj, you have such a wonderful son." And Nanda Maharaj is saying, "Wonderful son? What do you mean? He's a problem case, right? This boy is so lusty, it's incredible. If you know what we feed him at home, do you know that his mother is keeping special cows, and she feeds them the best grass, very soft, special grass, so that these cows give very special milk. And from this special milk, with love and devotion, she personally makes the best milk sweets. And she feeds them to our boy. And yet, still he's not satisfied. Still he goes out stealing anywhere else. He is so lusty. He goes everywhere stealing butter, yogurt and all these things. And then he throws it around as well. And feeds it to the monkeys. And when anybody says, "How can you feed this to the monkeys?" He say, "Oh, it is my duty. They have done so much service for me in my last life. I have to reciprocate like this." And in this way, Krishna is reminding everyone that in a previous appearance, he was Lord Ramachandra, who received so much service from these monkeys. But no one understands, except all of us. But in Vrindavan, no one understands. No one understands this, because no one can understand that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although, they know he has qualities like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because Garga Muni said so at the time of the name-giving ceremony we're remembering this morning. And then, once, it was an Ekadasi. And Nanda Maharaj was strict about Ekadasi. He was serious about it. Full fast. He's doing a full fast, and he was also going to end Ekadasi with a bath on the Dwadasi. But somehow or other, on that particular Dwadasi, Nanda Maharaj went to the river a little early, not because of a mistake, but because the Ekadasi Paran, the time to break the fast, was very short. Sometimes it happens. You have these times where there's, you know, only 5 minutes to break Ekadasi, right? It's tough. Anyway, Nanda Maharaj had a short Ekadasi break, and it was a bit early. So he went to the Yamuna very early. And it was not yet fully light. The sun had not actually risen above the horizon, although there was light in the sky. At that time, Nanda Maharaj went into the river, and it was an inappropriate muhurta. It was not the appropriate time. So the servants of Varuna immediately came and they arrested Nanda Maharaj. So Nanda Maharaj disappeared in the waters of the Yamuna. Alarm, alarm, alarm! Nanda Maharaj has disappeared into the waters! Immediately, Krishna tightened his belt, and Krishna personally jumped into the Yamuna. And moments later, Nanda Maharaj was taken under the water to the court of Varuna. And there he saw Varuna on a throne. And that's one thing he had never expected to see in this life. Varuna. Varuna is the lord of the ocean, and the ocean is filled with jewels. Therefore, the opulence of Varuna exceeds anything in this world. I mean, here we see a little glitter here and there, but you know, Varuna was just jewels all over. And when Nanda Maharaj saw this opulence and saw Varuna, he realized, this is Varuna. I am seeing Varuna. So Nanda Maharaj was kind of overwhelmed. Next moment, Krishna appears right there. And Varuna falls flat on the ground and next moment starts to offer prayers to Krishna and says, I have gone through so many births, but in all of these births, I have not attained the goal of life. But in this birth, I am attaining the goal of life. Namely, in this birth, I'm having the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he falls flat in front of Krishna and it worships him and everything. And Nanda Maharaj is looking like Varuna is saying that my son, Krishna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I can't believe it. And Garga Muni said that I would have a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now, it all comes out. It turns out that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, Krishna wasn't wasting any time because he knew that the residents of Vrindavan were in anxiety. Nanda Maharaj had disappeared into the Yamuna. So he said, yes, very nice to see you, you know, to Varuna. You know, yes, you have the darshan, but anyway, I gotta go now, you know, see you later. And he grabbed Nanda Maharaj, and moment later, they came out of the river back to the surface. And everyone was just totally jubilant. Krishna has saved Nanda Maharaj. He has saved his life. Krishna has brought him back from death. Nanda Maharaj is saved. All glories to Krishna and so on. And then Nanda Maharaj started to tell what had happened. He said, you know, under the water, suddenly these personalities grabbed me. Next moment, Varuna, jewels everywhere, demigod, the whole thing. Can you believe it? Then next moment, no, now it gets really incredible. Next moment, Krishna appears and Varuna falls flat, starts to worship Krishna as the Supreme Lord, said, now this birth is successful, and so on, and says, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone said, no, yes, yes, yes. Nanda Maharaj said, yes, yes, Krishna is God. No, the residents of Vrindavan said, ah, Krishna, you are God, and all this time you never told us. Gosh, you know, that's something. You're living in our village and you never told us that you are the Supreme Lord. No, this is really too much. Well, Krishna, now you have to show us something if you're God. Krishna says, okay, I'll show you something. What would you like? He says, well, how about if you show us the Brahma Jyoti? Krishna says, oh, the Brahma Jyoti. That's boring. That's boring. Why don't I show you Golok? You know, the spiritual world. And said, yeah, show us Golok. And then Krishna showed them Golok. And they saw that Golok Vrindavan was the same as their own village. There was only one difference. There were the Vedas personified, effulgent personalities who were there offering prayers to Krishna, just to show that it wasn't, that still was different. It was simultaneously one and different. So they could see, no, he's really showing us Golok. But they were very happy to see that their own village was none different from Golok. And that day, everybody in Vrindavan knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, you know, and everyone was amazed when he showed Golok. And for a few days, they all talked about it. I mean, have you heard? Have you heard? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, really? Wow, me. No, Really? Yeah, yeah. He showed us Golok. No. Yes, he's God. No. Yes, no, he is. But after a while, it sort of, the news wore out. Everybody knew about it. Have you heard Krishna? Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everybody knows that. You know what I'm saying? So after a while, everyone stopped talking about it. And then, after a while, because nobody talked about it anymore, people just forgot. They forgot. And Krishna, he's a cowherd boy like we are. He is herding the cows, the calves. He's playing with us. Krishna, he's my son, Nanda Maharaj said. He's my son. You know, he may be the Supreme Personality of God, that's irrelevant. He's my son, right? He's my son. And I have to correct him. I have to correct him. In this way, everything was going on in Vrindavan. And everyone was just completely happy to, from moment to moment, live with Krishna. Because in Vrindavan, everyone lives for the moment. Oh yes, who are these residents of Vrindavan? Remember one day Upananda was Nanda's eldest brother. And actually Upananda should have been on the throne. But somehow or other, his brother Nanda was so qualified. He was just so qualified that Upananda could see that he is more qualified than me. I will not accept the throne. Let Nanda have the throne. And in this way, Nanda became the king of the cowherd men, although his elder brother was present. But he was still the elder brother, and therefore, if he wanted, he could pull rank. You know, although generally he wouldn't do so. But on this occasion, he said that, Nanda, we have to talk. We have to talk. This is very serious now. So, Nanda came. Some other of the elders came and they sat down. And Upananda said, listen, it is getting too much here in Vrindavan. Demon after demon. Every day another demon comes. It's too risky. Remember that witch Putana who came? 20 kilometers, right? Yes. And many of these demons are big. The other day I was reading that Pralambasura was 16 miles in his original form. Right? So how many kilometers is that? From miles, that's two. Also 20. So, you know, something 16 times 1.654. Whoever wants to calculate it can do it. I carry on with my story. And so many demons came and they just disturbed the peace. And somehow or other, Krishna has been saved. Saved, first of all, by the worship of his mother, right? Who, before he leaves the house, chants many mantras so that nothing happens. And by our devotional service to our home deities, right? In this way, because Yasoda worships the deities so nicely, therefore the Lord is favorable to us and therefore nothing happens to Krishna, right? The deity interferes. No, really. But he is at great risk. At great risk. Therefore, we should move from this place. And then, Krishna moved. Moved from Gokul. And everyone was just ready to move. No one said, yeah, but I'm not leaving my house. This is the village where I was born. You know, no one kissed the ground and said, you know, Boma Ijadi, this is the place where I was born. Oh, my flesh and blood are from this place. No. Now the residents of Vrindavan showed that they were transcendental. And that they did not care about the place of their birth, but that they really cared about Krishna only. And immediately they left. And in this way, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are unfolding. So many things are going on. When Radha and Krishna were young and were staying in Nandagram and in Varsana, these were two hills that were situated in the plains. Krishna is residing on Nandishwar Hill in Nandagram, which is Lord Shiva performed many austerities and wanted to become a hill in Vrindavan. So it was granted to him. And therefore this Nandishwar Hill is none different from Lord Shiva. There is the palace of Nanda Maharaj. Oh, it is very beautiful. The columns are made of lapis lazuli, which is blue stone. And there are jewels in the walls. And even the garden wall is very nice, because in that village, no, it is different than the rest of India. In India, anywhere in India, in the morning the ladies, they go out from the house and they carry pots and they go to bring water. That is the tradition. They have to bring water. Yes. But not in Krishna's village. In Krishna's village, there are pipes made of bamboo and aqueducts, and there's running water in every house. When in Krishna's village everyone is walking with pots, it's not with water. The pots in Krishna's village, what is there? Butter and milk sweets going to the market. Yes. And there, so because there's all this running water, there's a lot of opulence of water, and therefore the garden wall of Nanda Maharaj is a stone wall, but it actually has a waterfall. So the whole wall is like a wall of water. It's like a big waterfall around the palace. In this way, Baladev Vijayabhusan describes in his Aishwarya Kadambini the opulence in which Krishna is living. And he describes how Radharani is then coming there also to cook for Krishna. So in this way, the pastimes of Krishna are unfolding, and the spiritual world is just completely transcendental. Did you ever go to Vrindavan? Did you ever go on a parikrama in Vrindavan? Is it like, if you go there, the distances between the places are quite something. And we go by jeep. We go by jeep and we drive here, there and everywhere. And you come home after having gone to some of the places. And when you come home at night, you're exhausted. Exhausted. Such a long distance. How is it possible that Krishna was walking these distances every day? And then you hear that Krishna in the morning goes out into the forest, and that Krishna has unlimited cowherd boy associates, and that each of these cowherd boys has unlimited calves. Now, can you imagine the traffic jams? I mean, in these narrow forest paths, it's not like 4-lane or 8-lane highways. No, no, no. And even they would get jammed with so many calves and cowherd boys. But it's just a narrow forest path. How is it possible? Must be horrific, the traffic. Right? But no, somehow or other, it is all going on. And Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, they walk all these distances, which we drive, but they reach soon. Because they're not bound by time. It's not that it takes so much time to go from here to there. It takes as long as they want it to take. It takes as long as it's the fun on the way. Because in Vrindavan, things are not governed by distances and by time. Things are not limited by space and by time and by thought, as in this material world. Here, everything limited by space, time and thought. Just like this temple room is limited by space. We are limited by time, but we have to stretch it a little because we started late, because the Sankirtan prizes took a long time. So, therefore, we can go over time. And also, after me, Sureshwar Prabhu will speak a few words, and we just steal that time, because stealing is part of our tradition. Krishna is stealing. So when our worshipable Lord is stealing, how can we not steal? Okay? Is there anyone who never stole Mahaprasadam? If you never stole Mahaprasadam, I'm afraid you have not joined the Hare Krishna movement yet. You know, I think you have missed the very one of the most important things in this movement, right? Ah, yes. Some have gone very far. We've had gangs. In Vrindavan, we've had gangs that would turn off the main light switch and then swipe the kitchen and clean out the trays with all the Mangalartic sweets. Of course, you know, many pastimes have taken place. I heard it in New Vrindavan. They had a cupboard which was filled with Mahaprasadam, and there were burglars who were regularly burgling that cupboard. And I heard that one time there was a Mataji who somehow or other was not married, and they put her in that cupboard. And when the thieves came at night, and the one who opened the door, he was her husband. True story, right? She was very big also. Yeah.
I'm yours.
Right. Yeah. Kirtananda Swami, who had orchestrated the whole thing, confirmed it and married them, and that was it. You know, marriage done. So we have so many Mahaprasadam stories, right, in our movement. Yes. Krishna Janmashtami is the day when we make so many offerings to Krishna for His pleasure. And Krishna is so merciful that then He eats it all and then somehow or other puts it all back on the plate. And then what to do with all those things that He left somehow or other? We'll have to deal with that also. That is also Janmashtami, fasting and feasting. So, in this way, we are absorbing ourselves in remembering Krishna on this day of Janmashtami. And as we are remembering Krishna, all other things in this world become small. They disappear into the background. All our worries, you know, we forgot them all. When we were in Vrindavan with Nanda Maharaj, and he almost drowned in the Yamuna, and then Krishna was God. Yeah, but didn't last long. So in this way, we get the more we just hear and the more we chant, the more it takes us away, and the more everything else becomes smaller. Smaller. It doesn't disappear overnight, but it becomes smaller. And gradually disappears. Prabhupada said that spiritual life is like taking off in a plane, and as you're up in the sky, everything begins to look small. All the problems look small, all the houses look small, all the things that were so important look small. Money begins to look small. All these things now are small, right? Krishna. There's that story which Prabhupada told about a lecture which was given by a Brahmana at Govardhan about Krishna. And the Brahmana was so absorbed and described Krishna in such a lively way. He started to describe how Krishna was dressed and how he was decorated, how he had a golden line on his chest, and that the goddess of fortune is always present with Krishna, and that Krishna had so many jewels. He had bangles, he had necklaces, he had the Kastuba gem, a huge gem on his chest. And, you know, there happened to be a thief present that day in the audience. And thieves, you know, thieves automatically are calculating the value of things. That's just a professional reflex. So as the Brahmana was listing Krishna's decorations, the thief was translating it into cash. And, you know, automatically he was adding it up in his mind. And then, when he heard these descriptions, just a light went on into his head and he said, this is it. This is it. You see, every thief has one dream. And that dream is that one day, in one go, he'll have made it for life. Right? That's the dream of it. That's the dream of a thief. So when the thief was calculating the value of all Krishna's jewels and ornaments, he realized, this is it. This is it. If I get these jewels, I've got it made for life. And thus, the thief, after the lecture, sort of came up to the Brahmana and said, that was very interesting. I really like this talk. That personality, Krishna, I'd like to meet him. Where could I find him? The Brahmana said, oh, he is roaming somewhere around Govardhan. He's herding his cows there or playing with his friends in the caves. He is decorating his body with the colored pigments or hiding in the caves and having pastimes there. In this way, Krishna can surely be found somewhere around Govardhan. Just walk around Govardhan. And by walking around Govardhan, that thief became purified. He walked around Govardhan again and again, didn't find Krishna, but, you know, I mean, remembering the price tag, he wasn't giving up so easily. He kept on walking, and one day, lo and behold, as they say in classical English, lo and behold, he saw right there in front of his eyes, he saw all these jewels. And he just came up to Krishna and said, give me those jewels. And Krishna said, no, I can't do that. Give me those jewels. So no, I can't do that. Mother Yasoda will become very upset. Give me those jewels. I mean, he was getting violent. So Krishna gave the jewels. Krishna gave him all the jewels. And then what happened was that thief, at that point, there was nothing left to dream. You know, most of us, our whole life, we have a dream and we never get it. We never get it. But this thief now, he got his dream. He had the biggest catch of his life in his hands. And he was thinking, what do I do now? So for a moment he was wondering, what do I do now? What am I going to do now with all these jewels? And then he saw Krishna. And he saw Krishna's indescribable beauty. And he saw Krishna's eyes. And he saw Krishna's noble nature. And he saw Krishna's unlimited kindness and love. And suddenly, he became touched. And something in his heart was ignited. And he said to Krishna, he said, you know, I've got all these jewels here. Is it all right if I decorate you with these jewels? And Krishna said, well, if you want, you can. So then the thief very carefully decorated Krishna very nicely with these jewels. And he was sold. The thief was sold to disservice to Krishna. And now could never, all other desires gone, only one desire remained, the desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna came home that evening, and Mother Yasoda said, what happened? I didn't dress you like that. Who did that? Krishna said, oh, my devotee did that. Yes, Krishna is the ultimate thief. He steals everything. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said he steals the eyes. He steals the words, the tongue of a person. He One can no longer say anything other than Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. One who becomes stolen by Krishna, his tongue becomes stolen by Krishna and he cannot say anything else but Krishna, 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 and just talk about Krishna, chant about Krishna. He cannot see anything anymore. Only Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Everywhere looking for Krishna. The eyes are stolen by Krishna. The ears are stolen by Krishna. Cannot hear anything. What? Newspaper? What? News? News about Krishna? No. About Trump? No, Krishna. Only Krishna. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudev parayana. And that is the Hare Krishna movement. The Hare Krishna movement is just made of this substance. This substance of only Krishna, of just constantly Krishna's glorification, hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's name, tasting things offered to Krishna. That is the Hare Krishna movement. And somehow or other, we are here. Sometimes I have felt that I'm in the temple, and the temple is non different from the spiritual world. The temple is transcendental. The deities are transcendental. The kirtan is transcendental. The prasadam is transcendental. The Bhagavatam is transcendental. The devotees are transcendental. Everything is transcendental except me. Have you also felt like that? Right? In this movement. It is a fact. Everything in this movement is transcendental. Everything is just made of Krishna, 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 Krishna in different ways. The entire manifestation of the Hare Krishna movement is just Krishna, 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 Krishna in unlimited ways. And just by being in it, our ears are being stolen little by little, already more than before, already more now. Now we have some eagerness to hear about Krishna. Before a lecture, the first lectures on the Sunday feast, one would sort of hear the lecture but think, when are we going to, when are we going to eat, how long is this guy going to talk? Or the kirtan, we didn't mind some kirtan, but, not hours and hours. Like this kirtan at the beginning, it was too short. Way too short. I didn't even take off. I was just sort of starting up the engine. The drummers were already getting tired, but I tell you, I hadn't even gotten into gear yet. What can we say? Because it's addictive. It's addictive. And we see this, that devotees can't stop. They can't stop speaking about Krishna. They can't stop chanting. Like Mahavishnu Swami. He can't stop. He can't stop. He just goes on and on and on. And it's just like, he's old actually. He's 70, I think 73 already. 73. And he's out there on Harinana. He goes the whole night kirtans. Whole night kirtans. Not stopping for nothing. And on Harinam, every day he's there. Well, every other day nowadays. Takes rest in between. 73. But even when he's resting, the kirtan doesn't stop. The kirtan continues to play all the time. Have you also experienced it sometimes? When you were in a kirtan and it was really powerful and it was just going and going and you got absorbed in the name. And then you went to bed and the tune was in your head and you slept and in the morning you woke up and the tune was still playing in your head. It's been playing the whole night. The whole night. And this is how it is. With time, it will always be like that. The name will always be there. Always be in our head. Always playing. Even when we are not loudly chanting, the name is still going on. Even when we say other things, the name will be there. In this way, gradually, this movement is taking over our life. I don't know if you're noticing it. But I tell you, This movement is taking over our lives. And why is it so? Because this movement is non-different from Krishna himself. This is the Hare Krishna movement, and Krishna is non-different from his name. This movement is Krishna, and therefore, Krishna is stealing everything. He's stealing our sight, our ears, our tongue, our bodies, our lives. And if he wants the next life also, Janmani, Janmani, Janmani Swade, give me life after life in your service, O Krishna. You know, we are totally stolen by Krishna. His property, he can do it as what he likes, right? And whatever he gives us, whatever mercy, it is fine. It's fine.